Welcome to the She Speaks podcast, a podcast created to elevate women's voices across diverse backgrounds on topics impacting women. I'm your host, Aliza Freud, founder and CEO of She Speaks. Each week, I have a conversation with a woman expert who shares her best how-to advice on a topic so we can learn how to better do that one thing from a woman who's been there and done that. Our hope is that these conversations help you feel more inspired to speak up and be heard in your own life and work. Now, on to the episode. Welcome back to the show. Hope you've all had a great week so far. We have another awesome new episode for you today. If you are one of the over 75% of women who have said that they've dealt with burnout and experienced burnout in the past, this is the episode you're going to want to listen to. This episode, we talk with expert on burnout, Kate Donovan, and we talk about first, how do you identify if you're burnt out? How do you know that you're burnt out? How do you distinguish that from depression? Because they can be confused with one another. So how do you distinguish it? And then what can you do to prevent burnout? And what can you do to recover from burnout? So this is, I think, just an eye-opening conversation. I learned so much. We also talk about some of the tests. There are lab tests now that doctors are able to give you that can help you understand what some of the underlying issues might be that relate to what happens as burnout exists in our bodies. We talk about how there are brain changes that can occur from burnout, and it's basically an enormous amount of stress to the system. So what are some of the things that now they are looking at doing that are medical interventions? So I am excited for you to hear this episode because I think that it is chock full of good information. Hopefully you will get some good insights into this, though, that if you or somebody you know, somebody who you care about is suffering from burnout, hopefully you will give them a chance to hear this too and share this conversation with them. I hope you enjoy this and we're going to jump into it. Here we go. So I'd love to first start, if we can, with you talking a little bit about your own story of burnout.
So I really was upended by burnout because I was the person who always followed her heart. I finished pretty close to the top of my class in high school, got a scholarship to Boston University as a pre-med student, was going to be a doctor. I was a year and a half in and I was like, oh no, this is not for me. And I left a almost fully paid undergraduate degree at Boston University to move to California and do a master's program in Chinese medicine. So I made this massive shift because I knew it wasn't right. And during my schooling, I took a trip to Argentina, met my future husband, who happens to be from Poland, not Argentina, just to like really throw us all over the world. I finished my degree in California, moved to Poland, created a successful acupuncture practice in Warsaw. My husband got a job offer in Prague. We moved to Prague, spent 6 years in Prague. During that time, this life sounds so perfect. How many people have these opportunities? How many people are able to say, I followed my heart, I did what I wanted, I met the right person, and I was feeling awful. And all my friends were like, so jealous of your life. And I was like, I'm miserable. And I didn't understand what was happening. I didn't attribute it to stress. I didn't know how I could even be stressed. I had this incredible experience, this incredible life. And one day I read an article about burnout. All my years as a healthcare practitioner, I had never heard of it. And as I was reading the article, you know when something is so true and it just hits you right in the gut and you get full body chills? And I was reading it. I got them again just now. And I was reading it and I was like, oh my God, this is what's happening to me. My thyroid had let go. I was exhausted. I was gaining weight. Like everything was a mess and I couldn't figure it out. And it just clicked that day. And I went down through, of course, this like period of transformation afterwards. I am not one of those people that does the work she does now because I did it all by myself and now I'm going to help you do it better. No, I had all the help in the world. I used every bit of help I could afford. So I had, at the time, a coach, a therapist, a functional medicine practitioner, and an acupuncturist, all at different times, you know, but still my recovery required all of those things, plus a huge amount of introspection. And as I was coming out of it, people started, as this happens, right, asking for help. Then I moved back to the States, realized that the state that we moved to is the only state in the country where my acupuncture license is not valid. So I had wanted to sort of move into speaking and coaching. And so I used it as an opportunity to do that. And now here we are 4 years later in a different world, in a different, you know, just different. Thank God.
Wow. Lot to unpack. And I want to go back to one of the first things that you said, because the more I think about the burnout idea, and which inevitably so many of us feel at some point in our life, the more I think that it's something in us that's telling us that there's a change that's needed, that we need to do something different. And then it's a matter of, how do you find that thing you want to do next? How do you know if you're burnt out? What does it feel like?
So burnout has a very clear definition based on the World Health Organization. I do not fully agree with this definition, but it is the central tenet on which we must function right now, because otherwise we're going off on tangents and everybody's talking about something different. So the first part of burnout is that there are three components involved. The very first component is physical and emotional exhaustion, which basically covers almost every symptom you could have, right? Which is like the silliest. It's so silly, but physical and emotional exhaustion. The second one is cynicism and detachment. We call this being a negative Nancy and feeling like you're alone in the world. And the third one is feeling that your work is not impactful, that you can't be productive, that what you do doesn't really matter. And so all three of these components have to be in place. And according to the current definition, this is all associated with your work. This is where I disagree, right? Because there's a huge span where this could come from. Now, if you have all three components, you can say that you're burnt out. That's the current rule. However, the physical manifestations and the emotional, mental manifestations of burnout will vary. On the emotional side, the most common descriptor I get from people is that they feel like they cannot manage their emotions anymore. So they're exploding, whether that be in anger or tears. They just don't have the wherewithal to talk themselves through different situations. This makes sense on a physiological basis because there are some brain changes associated with burnout that make this make sense. So this is like, okay, we get it. This is actually happening and you really can't control your emotions. It's not, you're not just imagining it. You really can't. On the physical side, what we find, and this is where my Chinese medicine background is really handy, what we find is that previous areas of weakness in your world and in your body are where your symptoms will arise. So if you were in a car accident at age 12 and had whiplash, your burnout will likely come with headaches and neck pain. If you went to Mexico as a kid and got Montezuma's Revenge, your burnout might come with GI distress, with gastrointestinal distress, with gut disorders, right? Your stress system has an effect on every single process in your body. So the symptoms can be absolutely anything. If you had a tendency toward a lot of strep throat and flus and colds as a kid, you're probably going to have a lot of colds when you're burnt out. So it kind of depends on the person.
I'm kind of blown away by all, like every time you answer a question, Kate, you give me like 12 things to think about. Yeah. I do want to get to you've explained to us what burnout looks like, right? We just talked about what it could look like. And I don't know that you have to necessarily, right, have all three of those symptoms that you talked about.
Technically you do. That's the diagnostic procedure.
So the diagnostic procedure is that you have to have all those three. Let's say you kind of come to the conclusion that you are burnt out. What do you do next?
So to me, we have to talk about both the physical component and the life component of what's going on. So your first step, your first stage is going to a doctor and doing a blood analysis and a urine analysis. Because if we find out that you have low vitamin B12 or low vitamin D or you're low on iron, you're anemic, something else is going on. It doesn't make sense to try and implement any serious change when you have a lack of energy that's due to a lack of nutrients. So let's first make sure that you're in optimal levels of functioning. So that's step one. The research on burnout that's been around for about 40, going on 50 years, says that up to 80% of your burnout is your work's fault. Again, I disagree with this. I think it ends up being a little bit more 50-50 personal factors and work factors. But what we need to understand is that burnout doesn't have a one shift here and everything's going to get better component. It also doesn't have a this one thing was the cause component. In order for you to be vulnerable to burnout, there are a million factors that had to be part of your life. And it's not your fault, no matter how many changes you have to make in order to get out of it, no matter how responsible you still are for getting out of it, it's not your fault for getting into it. If you have coping mechanisms that you created as a child to protect you and they lead you to burnout down the road, that's not your fault. That's just life, right? So before we get into, I'm going to change this one thing and my life is going to get better, we have to understand that if your stress response system is constantly overloaded, we have to look at the life overall and say, well, what is overloading it? And it might be that you have a micromanager for a boss. It might be that you're underpaid. It might be that you're a mother to two kids under three and you just can't manage. It might be that you have a terrible partner.
So I guess that's my question then about this balance that we're talking about, whether it's, you know, 100% work or 50-50 we talked about. I feel like I encounter women in day-to-day life who don't work at all, who feel burned out.
Of course. Right?
Why does work have to be a component of the burnout?
Because according to the research, the researchers don't have really great ways to differentiate burnout from depression right now. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of overlapping symptoms. Mm-hmm. It's not the same thing. I've experienced them both and they were different for me personally. Mm-hmm. But some people, like I was saying earlier, if you have a tendency to a certain thing, you're going to have that during burnout. So if you have a genetic tendency toward depression, when you burn out, you're probably going to have depression at the same time. But mm-hmm. on a medical research basis, they just don't have enough clarity mm-hmm. of what's really happening in the body to say which is which. So they put it over there so that it has its own category.
I want to talk a little bit about your background in the master's in Chinese medicine. You were going down the medical school route and made the decision to switch to the master's in Chinese medicine. Can you talk about what that can teach us about ourselves that then informs this whole idea of burnout?
So for me, the Western medicine, I will say right off the bat, I love for a lot of things. When I ruptured my Achilles a few years ago, I was not running to my acupuncturist. I was running to the surgeon. Yep. And so I believe that everything has its place. Mm-hmm. Chronic disorders are not well managed in the Western medicine system. Mm. They're just not. We don't have a great track record in Western medicine of chronic disorders. Looking towards systems that look at your body more holistically is critical. So Chinese medicine involves looking at what we call your constitution. So where your inherent strengths and weaknesses are on a physical side. We look at how every system of your body connects to everything else. So you don't go to a Chinese medicine doctor and only look at gynecology or only look at immunology or only look at ENT, you know, you're looking at everything all at the same time. So you have somebody that's going to see you as an entire system, and that system includes your lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the massive differences. I'll never forget being in China for one of my internships, and someone came in with a skin disorder, and the doctor was talking to her and the translator was going, and he looked at us at one point right in front of the patient. This is China, so it's the different rules about patient privacy. Right in front of the patient, turned to us and said, "This woman is way too angry. She's fighting with her son, and this is why her skin is doing this."
Wow.
Yes. So there's some components, emotional components that become really obvious through Chinese medicine, mm-hmm. through a Chinese medicine lens that are just not part of your diagnosis at all in Western medicine. So functional medicine does that, that optimization piece that I think mm-hmm. when you're working with something like burnout and the numbers sometimes are not telling you that you're sick, but you feel terrible, that optimization piece is the piece that's often missing.
Mm. I love this. I mean, thank you. This is really a great explanation and important things for people to understand, especially if they're kind of new to these areas. So when we're thinking about burnout, why are we still having such an issue with it? And why specifically women?
It's not specifically women.
Okay.
I think is the first thing. I think it mm-hmm. is slightly more women, but we don't mm-hmm. know if that's because men are not admitting to it.
Mm.
And the number differentials are not as big as people would have them be. This is an opinion, not a fact. This is a hypothesis, not a fact. But, you know, part of a burnout situation is the fact that you did create some coping mechanisms as a child due to some sort of trauma. Maybe you don't think you had trauma because you didn't grow up in a war-torn country or you didn't have, you know, some massive event happen. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't actually take much as a child for you to create ways of being that help keep you safe. For instance, my father was an alcoholic until he's still an alcoholic, but he stopped drinking when I was six. And I was afraid that he was going to start drinking again. And I equated his mood to his drinking. So if he was happy, he was okay. But if he was angry, he wasn't. So mm. I became the family jester because mm. I was trying to keep him happy all the time. Mm-hmm. So I can make a joke out of anything because I fulfilled that role. That did lead to later in life, sometimes people thinking that I wasn't taking them seriously, mm-hmm. to missed connections in some way, shape, or form, to a lot of self-deprecating humor, which is mm-hmm. not a healthy thing to do on a constant basis, right? So that was an issue. In addition, I created a perfectionism circle because for some reason, as a small child, I decided that when my father got back from rehab, the mistakes that had been allotted our family by the universe or God or whatever, he had used. I don't know where this came from, where this idea came from, but I remember thinking it. I can't make mistakes anymore because all of the mistakes that were allotted our family, he already used. So now I've got to be perfect all the time. That drive to perfection was part of my burnout story.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I think we keep burning out because a good portion of the real issues lie in childhood trauma.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're just not dealing with that well.
This is so intriguing to me because what it does also is it begs the question, what are ways that we can get in touch with those things? Aside from going and seeing a professional, are there things that people can do on their own to try to tap into insights?
Get in touch with your resentment.
Mm.
Find your resentment, take note of it, write it down. And when I say resentment, you might want to start with things like irritations and frustrations and annoyances at first, because resentful is an emotion that a lot of us do not admit to because it's not, doesn't feel kind, doesn't feel polite, doesn't feel socially acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
So look into what we call around Fried, we call this the anger group of emotions, anger, irritation, frustration, annoyance, resentment. When you start really digging into these, what you're going to find is these are all the places in your life where boundaries are either not built properly, missing, or broken.
Mm.
Once you figure out where things are broken, you can start to ask yourself why they're broken. This was jarring for me when I started doing this work with myself, because the thing that I realized most frequently was that I built fences and then jumped over them myself. So I was disrespecting my own boundaries constantly. And while I had been blaming people in the background for a long time, a lot of it was not people taking advantage of me or ignoring me, or it was me. Yep. And that was a really hard thing for me to swallow, but also gave me a ton of control.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because there is something that I think is difficult maybe in the time that we're living in right now, where we do seek to say, well, it's it's not your fault. There's something about that that is incredibly depowering. I don't know what's the right word for it, but
disempowering is the one that I use.
Thank you. Where is the personal agency? There's nothing to me that is more frustrating than someone basically presenting me with something that I cannot change.
Yeah.
So how do we approach these things, knowing that we're in a time where we're being told that maybe it's not in our control, different areas, different things, with the notion that as a human being, we have to feel personal agency? How do we reconcile these things?
The question is, what is in your control? Mm-hmm. So this concept in psychology is referred to as an internal locus of control versus an external locus of control. And the idea is either internal locus of control, I have influence over my life, or external locus of control, life happens to me. And it's been shown a million times over that having an internal locus of control is more beneficial for your health, mental health, physical health, emotional health, all of it. So this internal locus of control, this personal agency that you're talking about, is critical. And it is the fight that I am fighting on LinkedIn. Because there are a lot of people that study organizational psychology that have run a lot of surveys and questionnaires on organizational psychology that say workplace is 80% of the problem. And I'm like, that's not helpful, especially for people that are already burnt out.
Yeah,
that is helpful information for how companies can grow in order to help prevent some burnout in the future. So I don't think that it's unnecessary information. I think it's critical information. But I work with people who are already burnt out. They do not have the time to wait for this organization to wake up and make changes. They have got to do something now. They don't have the time. And so this, I will get real fired up about this because this is like the hill I'm going to die on. And so I'm constantly talking about this differentiation between prevention and recovery, because society can do quite a bit to help us with prevention. Society cannot do much to help us with recovery. And this is the same. What we fail to understand is a lot of people sort of throw around the word burnout as, it's just this like state of being and you can just snap out of it. No, there are physiological changes to your body and brain that happen when you're burnt out that require healing. If you got cancer, you would go for treatment. Burnout requires treatment. And I think this is something that we really don't understand. So we try to say, well, if you just, you know, made the workplace culture more psychologically safe, it would be fine. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
No, you still need to heal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you for that question.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just thinking to myself, too, based on what you were saying, some of us learn this earlier in life. Some of us learn it later in life. But I remember as a kid, I kind of didn't look like everyone else that I was in school with. And when you're little, being different is not a great thing. And I remember coming home and, you know, being upset about it. And my mom saying to me, listen, this is the way that they are going to behave. You cannot change them. All you can do is change the way you react to them. And that's what's in your control. And I remember that lesson because I think about it so often as through the years, because it applies to so many different parts of your life. It just is such a great lesson, and one that I found to be very empowering, because I couldn't change them. I was not going to change those kids who were acting the way they were acting. All I could do was change how I was going to react to it. Yeah. And I am grateful that I learned that lesson pretty early on. But
probably
I wonder,
saved you some grief along the way.
You know, some grief is unavoidable, right?
Some, yes, but it probably saved you from some bonus grief.
For sure, for sure. But I have to say, the part about that, going back to the personal agency we were talking about before, the part about that was so important was the lesson of, I can be in control even when it seems that I'm not in control. It is going to be harder to change an organization. And yes, maybe it will happen and there might be plans to change it. But at the end of the day, that is going to take a longer period of time. And how do you change now? How do you have relief? How do you get some relief now?
And sometimes that requires leaving an environment. Sometimes it doesn't. Right. So a lot of my clients don't leave their jobs. And some of them absolutely have to. Some of the environments, I don't love throwing the word toxic around because I think it's overused. And I think anytime somebody does anything that we don't love, we just call them toxic. And that's not exactly the definition. But there are environments that are actually unsafe for some people. That same environment can be perfect for another person. Mm-hmm. I think where personal agency can be a trip up for some people is that they get this idea that no matter what's going on, they should always be able to be okay. And that's not necessarily true. There's no reason for you to force yourself to stay in a place that's damaging you on a regular basis. It's like being stuck in an abusive relationship.
Yeah.
It's the same thing as being stuck in a toxic work environment. So I think we get caught up in this idea that I can't tell you how many people I've spoken to that have said, well, I've pretzeled myself into so many shapes to try and fit into this place, and I don't know how to pretzel myself anymore. I'm like, well, then you've got to go. You don't fit in here for whatever reason. Maybe it's the personnel. Maybe it's the overall culture. Maybe it's, it doesn't matter. But we try too hard, I think, sometimes to fit into places where if we just looked at the data, we just don't fit into.
Yeah.
So stop trying to be the missing jigsaw puzzle piece in a jigsaw puzzle that doesn't include you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and that it's okay to take yourself out of situations that aren't serving you.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And I think this is where the personal agency gets a little tricky because people start to think, well, if I have personal agency and I have that amount of control, then I should be able to be okay in every situation. Mm-hmm. And that's just not, you're just not going to be okay in every situation.
Right. And that is a really fair point. So how can we heal from burnout?
You start with going to a doctor and finding out if you have some sort of nutrient thing off, because if you can't mindset your way out of a vitamin B deficiency, it's just not going to happen. The next thing you do in my world, according to me, is look through the resentments.
Yep.
Look through the angers, find where the boundaries are broken. You're not going to be able to put them all into place at once. The questions that come up after that is, why are these things broken? What is the behavior that I created to match this energetic situation that we do not, my number one rule is that we do not demonize behaviors in my coaching practice ever. Mm-hmm. You created this as a protective mechanism. It's absolutely acceptable. It worked for you for probably 25, 35 years. So thank you to this mechanism for keeping you safe all of these years. And also, it might not be working for you in X, Y, and Z situations. So where can we still use this? Like if you're a perfectionist and you're my brain surgeon, please keep your perfectionism on for my surgery.
Please.
So we don't necessarily need to eliminate our behaviors. We need to use them well.
Yeah.
So your job is going to be to start adjusting where you are using certain behaviors, where they're really going to support you and fuel you, and where they're just not necessary.
Right.
Once you start doing that, we go through what we call the life pruning process. When you have a tree that you want to grow in a certain way and you want all the leaves to be flush, you cut away dead branches, you cut away certain shapes, you cut away extra, right? So we prune your life. You have to start to take things off your plate. When we are really busy, we tend to throw things on our plate without realizing, like, well, I'm just so busy. I'll just throw that extra thing in and I'm just going to get it done. And everything has this massive sense of urgency.
Mm.
You have to stop and look at the plate.
Yeah.
What is on this plate? What needs to be taken off this plate? This is part of the resentment process as well. When you go through the resentments, the first question that I have people ask themselves about tasks that come up during the resentments is, does this thing need to be done? Mm-hmm. This is the first question. Mm-hmm. Does this thing need to be done? Because if it doesn't need to be done, honey, ship it.
Yep.
Get rid of it. Mm-hmm. We don't need it. Get it out of here. So what I've found as a typical rule is that between 10 and 20% of the things that we're doing every day don't need to be done at all.
Between 10 and 20%?
10 and 20%. That's a huge number.
Yeah, it sure is. That's a lot of time.
It's a lot. It's a ton. But we're so wrapped up in a lot of the things for business owners out there. When you start your own business, you start doing things and you wear a ton of hats. And at some point you have to take some of the hats off. And at some point you have to decide if something is actually making any monetary difference in your business or not. And at some point you have to, a lot of us just don't get to at some point. So we are continuously doing things that are not actually adding value to any part of our business, but we continue them because I've always done it this way.
Right. Right.
That's the stuff that we got to get rid of. Once you get your energy back, you move through this resentment, you get rid of some stuff, then it's boundary building time.
Yeah.
Where do the boundaries need to be repaired? Where do they need to be built that they were never built in the first place? And where do you need to stop jumping over your own fence?
Yeah.
Those three components. You spend a lot of time in that zone.
Yeah.
The rest of your life, probably.
Yeah. Well, because it's going to shift. I mean, yes. That's the other thing too. We go through different seasons of our life and things evolve. And that's why I think there's this thing that we do where we look back and we go, why did I do that? Why did I do that? And it's because we needed to do it then. We were different then than we are today. We evolve. But it's almost as if we don't allow ourselves that recognition that we are evolving creatures.
Well, we get attached to our identities. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest issues I see people going through with burnout is, well, I'm going to leave this job. I don't want to do this anymore, but I spent all of my parents' money and 10 years of my life becoming a lawyer. Who am I if I'm not a lawyer? Who am I if I'm not a doctor? Who am I if I'm not an acupuncturist? Who am I if I'm not this this identity knot is a huge one for people to manage.
Right. Well, it's scary. It's scary to kind of redefine yourself. But if you think about it, it is the place that allows us to make that change that we need. And it's important for us to recognize that we can change, that something that was good for us 5 years ago, 10 years ago, is not going to be good for us now.
Even if you're good at it and people praise you for it.
Amen. Right. Right. Wow. So, well, Kate, if people want to learn more about what you're doing, how you do it, what is the best way for them to do that?
The best way to get into all things me is through Fried the Burnout Podcast, because there you can check out all sorts of different topics, find the things you need. All of the show notes have every way, shape, and form to contact me. So that's all there. But the best way, if you're listening and you're like, I need more information, the podcast, we're on 186 episodes right now. We have plenty there. There's plenty to listen to. We've covered just about every topic. So that's the best place to start.
I love it. Well, and I can say I did look through some of those and you've got some great topics in there. Some that I think our listeners will resonate with them, in addition to just overall this idea of burnout and understanding it better. So thank you for spending this time with us.
Thank you for asking me such fun questions.
My pleasure. Thank you for listening. If you're an influencer or a brand that wants to work with us, please feel free to email us at info@shespeaks.com. Until next time.